Next, we turn to a physician and author in Middlebury, Jack Mayer. Jack Mayer is the author of a book, Life in a Jar, The Irena Sendler Project. During World War II, Irena Sendler was a Polish Catholic social worker who organized a rescue network of fellow social workers to save 2,500 Jewish children from certain death in the Warsaw Ghetto. Incredibly, after the war, her heroism, like that of so many others, was suppressed by Communist Poland and remained unknown for 60 years. Jack Mayer, let me first ask, how does a pediatrician in Middlebury find himself writing a book?
You know, it's not anything I thought would happen, and I really, there's so many ghost stories associated with this, with the telling of this story, that it fell into my lap, and it's such a compelling story. It is such an amazing to be able to tell these two stories and how they work together, the wartime history of Irena Sendler and this contemporary story of American teenagers, and I think this it says something important about Holocaust education and about education in general, that if we want children to understand and young people to understand history in a way that will inform their own decision making and their own the way they live their lives, it has to be their story as well. It has to be a contemporary story as well. And that's what so intrigued me about the way these two stories come together, is that it's this vital history that our children really need to understand in great depth and understanding, and a contemporary story about their peers, about three typical American teenagers that they can emulate.
Explain the title, Life in a Jar.
When Irena Sendler and her network rescued children, they kept a record of every child that they rescued, and there were two reasons. The most important for Irena was that these children would know their Jewish names and know that they were Jewish. Each of these children had forged identity papers, baptismal certificates, identity cards, ration cards, and they had new Polish names. So each slip of paper had the child's Jewish name, then their new Polish name, and also where they were hidden, because the underground network provided monthly support for the foster families or the convents or the orphanages that took these children in. The lists were all kept together in one place in three jars that were buried under an apple tree in one of the co-conspirators' backyard. And Irena and one other co-conspirator knew where these jars were, and they dug them up each month and put the new lists in to be able to keep this information. It was an incredibly dangerous thing to do, and many of her network were quite upset with her for doing this, because if the Nazis found these lists, it would be devastating. They would know where all of these children were.
What did Irena Sendler do, and for her work, and why was she moved to save Jewish children?
She was a social worker, and she credits her father with instilling in her this mission as a rescuer. And there were two things her father said to her that she kept with her all of her life. One was, if you see someone drowning, you have to rescue them, even if you cannot swim. The other thing he said was, there are only two kinds of people in this world, good people and bad people, and it doesn't matter what their race, what their religion, what their creed is. And so those were the two underpinnings of her basic moral philosophy, and informed her work.
And she was willing to risk her life to do this.
It's quite remarkable. This was, and she was afraid. She freely admits that, but she felt that this was a necessary thing for her to do, and that there was no way for her to walk away from this. I think very few of us would be as courageous as Irena Sendler. She really took her life in her hands. But every one of us could be as courageous as Liz, Megan, and Sabrina, and do what they did.
Okay. After the news, we're talking with Dr. Jack Mayer, author of Life in a Jar. And after the news, we'll hear the story about the three Kansas teenagers who rescued the rescuer.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is pleased to provide David Goodman's Conversations with underwriting from the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, National Life Group, Concept 2, The Alchemist, by Green Mountain Power, and Let's Grow Kids, as well as over 750 Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility members.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Jack Mayer. He's a pediatrician from Middlebury, but he's also the author of a book, Life in a Jar, The Irina Sendler Project. And it's about a woman in World War II, a Polish Catholic social worker, who helped save thousands of Jewish children. I spoke with Dr. Jack Mayer just a few hours ago. He came by the WDEV studio, and we'll continue our conversation here. Jack Mayer, how did you come upon this improbable story that you found? I see in your book this dates back to coming into your office as a pediatrician in the Middlebury area and seeing a copy of, was it the Ladies' Home Journal? So yeah. Let's start there.
It actually goes back even further than that. It goes back a few years before that in 2001. I'm a member of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, so I send them my contribution every year. They send me a calendar every year, and I even brought the calendar along so you can see it. And I quickly flipped through it. I'm a pediatrician in Middlebury. I get a ton of mail every day. Everything has about 2 seconds to either be recycled or thrown away or kept. I quickly flipped through this calendar and came upon this picture of Irina Sendler and this short paragraph about her, which said that she had rescued 2,500 Jewish children from the Warsaw Ghetto. And I was shocked. I said, what? I never heard of Irina Sendler. Everybody knows Oskar Schindler, who rescued 1,100 Jews from a German concentration camp in Poland. Why don't I know Irina Sendler? I'm a German Jew. My parents were Holocaust survivors. Some of my family did not survive the Holocaust. I'm a pediatrician. I'm interested in these things. Why don't I know Irina Sendler? So I kept this calendar. This was the 2002 calendar of the Holocaust Memorial Museum. And I put it in a file that I keep in my desk that's labeled Interesting Stuff. And it's just an eclectic collection of just stuff that's interesting. And I put it away, and it sat there for 3 years. And then in 2003, I came into my office one day in February evening to see a child. And on my desk is open a copy of the Ladies' Home Journal to this story about these three Kansas teenagers who had discovered the forgotten history of Irina Sendler and her heroic rescue network in the Warsaw Ghetto. I remember this calendar, and I brought it out, and I called the teacher of these Kansas kids in Fort Scott, Kansas. Well, actually in Uniontown, Kansas, just to talk with him and get some more information about Irina Sendler. And I mentioned to him that I'm also a writer. I've been a closet writer for 40 years. And, you know, mostly I write for myself, and it's mostly fiction or essays or some poetry. So while we were talking, he said, you know, it's serendipitous that you should call because we're looking for someone, for a writer, to write the story of the two stories, the Irina Sendler's wartime story and the story of these Kansas teenagers 60 years later. And so he asked me to send him a writing sample, which I did. I sent him a short story I had written. He called me back. He said, I like the way you write. Would you come out and meet us? And so I got on an airplane. November 2004, I was out in Fort Scott, Kansas, and met them all. And I went to Uniontown, Kansas, where the high school is. And, you know, this story comes out of the least likely place you would expect this story to come from.
Yes, so explain, what is the connection between teenagers in Kansas and a Holocaust heroine?
Okay, so let me set the scene for you a little bit first. Uniontown, Kansas, it's a town of 280 people. The high school, it's a regional high school, has 120 students in it.
Total, for 9 through 12.
They're in
so
this
maybe
high
30
school.
Students per year
30
graduating.
Students per year. Yeah. And it's in southeast Kansas. It's one of the poorest school districts in Kansas. It's a very isolated rural area of Kansas. In this high school, there had never been a Jew. There had never been a person of color. There had never even been a Catholic in this school. I mean, this was a white Protestant high school. And a pretty economically depressed area of Kansas. But with a remarkable social studies teacher, Norm Kennard, who was the one who has his students participate in National History Day, which is this wonderful nationwide program that encourages students to do these history projects. It's grades 6 through 12. It's kind of like the science fair for history. And every year his students participate in National History Day, and he has files full of just interesting articles and things just to stimulate their thought processes about what project they might do. And one of the girls who started this project found this article, short article, that was called The Other Schindlers. And it was from U.S. News and World Report from 1995, and it included this short paragraph that I read in the Holocaust Memorial Museum's calendar about Irina Sendler, and they decided to do a project on her, thinking that she must be dead because she would have been 90 years old, and they knew that she had been arrested by the Gestapo and tortured in a prison that nobody escaped from. So they started looking at cemetery records in Poland to find out where she was buried, and started trying to put together this story about a Polish Catholic social worker who knocked on doors in the Warsaw Ghetto and asked Jewish mothers and fathers to give up their children to save them. And they put together a 10-minute play for National History Day. And they performed it. They won the regional contest. They won the state contest. By then, there was a lot of publicity about the project that they were doing. And when they went to the national conference at the University of Maryland, they were sort of inundated with media and public radio, and people were in their faces with microphones. They got very nervous, and they sort of flubbed their lines, didn't win the national competition. But afterwards, Kathy Gorn, who's the president, who's the head of National History Day, especially came up to them. And you have to understand, when this play is produced, people are routinely in tears. I mean, here are parents giving up their children with the hope that they will survive, but giving their children up to a stranger who in this most horrible of circumstances in the Warsaw Ghetto. And indeed, when they put the play on at National History Day, the judges were in tears. And Kathy Gorn came up to them and said, you know, this is what National History Day is really all about. After that performance, they were invited to put their play on in other venues, and they were invited in Kansas City, and they started putting the play on. They then learned from the Jewish Foundation for the Righteous that Irina Sendler was still alive, which was just a shocking discovery.
So now this is the age of the internet still. It's 2005, so they had not determined that she was alive?
No. They did an internet search, and they got one hit, and the one hit was from Yad Vashem, which is the Israeli Holocaust Authority. Yad Vashem had recognized Irina Sendler as a righteous Gentile, and they had honored her as righteous among the nations, even planted a tree in her honor, which is planted next to Raoul Wallenberg's tree in Jerusalem. That was the only hit they got on the internet. And no one knew if she was still alive. As a matter of fact, the calendar entry from the Holocaust Museum, the smartest people about the Holocaust in America, it has her dates as being 1916, which is incorrect. She was actually born in 1910, and unknown.
Could you read the paragraph that you all had to go on for your knowledge of Irina Sendler?
Okay, so this is from the 2002 calendar of the Holocaust Memorial Museum. As head of the children's section of Żegota, the Polish Underground Council for Aid to Jews, Social worker Irena Sendlerova helped smuggle more than 2,500 Jewish children out of the Warsaw Ghetto. Hiding them in orphanages, convents, schools, hospitals, and private homes, she provided each child with a new identity, carefully recording in code their original names and placements so that surviving relatives could find them after the war. Arrested by the Gestapo in the fall of 1943, Sendlerova was sentenced to death. Zsigota rescued her before execution. She assumed a new identity and continued her work for Zsigota.
So that was it. That was all they had to go on. So they'd been working on this project for probably well over a year or so. They must have been thunderstruck to find out that she was alive.
It was shocking, and I describe in my book Life in a Jar what that moment was like when they got the first confirmation that she was in fact alive, and then received a letter from her after they had communicated with her.
How did they find her?
They founded the Jewish Foundation for the Righteous, which is an organization that provides monetary support for survivors of the Jewish survivors of the Holocaust, and for rescuers, for people who were rescuers during the Holocaust. They were giving her a stipend. They were providing Irena Sendler with a stipend every year as part of her support.
What happened next? They find out that Irena Sendler is alive. Then what happens?
Well, the next thing is that some philanthropists in Kansas City who saw the play produced at a synagogue at a middle school in Kansas City raised the money to send the girls and their families to Poland to meet Irena, which they did in 2001. And that began an eight-year relationship with her where she was almost like a grandmother to these three girls. And they visited many times after that. They put the play on in Poland. And they also, when they went to Poland, they also learned from Irena more details about what she and her network had done. They expanded the play. It became longer. It became a half an hour long. They were actually the archival source of information about this rescue network that really no one else knew about, or no one else had written about or talked about in Poland.
Now, when they made contact with Irena Sendler, and we are talking with Dr. Jack Mayer. He is a physician in Middlebury, but more importantly, and as far as this show, he's the author of a book, Life in a Jar, The Irena Sendler Project. And the subtitle is based on the true story of Irena Sendler, a Holocaust hero, and the Kansas teen who rescued the rescuer. So, Jack Mayer, when they discover, so to speak, Irena Sendler, was she kind of a folk hero in Poland? What was her status there?
She was completely unknown. Nobody knew who she was. She lived with her her daughter-in-law in a small apartment in Warsaw. And she was basically forgotten, as were many of the rescuers in Poland. And you have to understand that Poland, after the war, became a communist country. It was a very repressive communist regime that governed Poland, and a very anti-Semitic communist regime. If you were a rescuer of Jews, you kept that information private. There was this sense of denial and silence about the victimization of Poland during the Holocaust. There were collaborators in Poland. There was a fair amount of anti-Semitism in Poland. There was this sort of post-traumatic stress disorder, this nationwide PTSD in Poland about the Holocaust, and
a kind of willful forgetting.
Because a willful forgetting.
If you collaborated with the Nazis, you were implicated, and if you helped Jews in an anti-Semitic society, you were also in trouble.
Exactly. And Zsigota, this rescue network that Irena was part of, When the communists came to power, they labeled the partisans and the anti-fascists and Zhagota network as outlaws, is what they called them.
The communists labeled the rescuers, the resistance,
as outlaws, and they put many of them on trial. Many of them were imprisoned. Some of them were executed. So there was really a focused state effort to suppress any kind of heroic remembrance of the resistance and of rescuers. I met a gentleman in my wife and I went with the Kansas students in 2005. This was their third visit to Poland, and we were celebrating Irena's 95th birthday, and that's when I got to interview her and talk with her and meet and interview some of the children who she had rescued as children, who were now in their 60s and 70s, and some of the scholars of the Warsaw Ghetto in Poland. And at one of the performances, I met this elderly gentleman who was clearly old enough to have been an adult during the war. And all through the performance, he was holding his hands together, cupping something in his hands. And I asked him afterwards what that was. He showed me his Yad Vashem medal. And he told me that he had kept this buried in his basement. he had only told his wife. He had not told his children about this. He had not told his friends, his family, his co-workers. This was his secret.
What is a Yad Vashem medal?
Yad Vashem medal is given by Yad Vashem, the Israeli Holocaust Memorial Museum, to people who were rescuers during the war, righteous Gentiles. Gentiles who rescued and helped Jews to survive during the war. So here's this gentleman. He said, "This is the finest thing I've ever done in my life. And I had to keep this this recognition of what I did buried in my basement." And now, he said, because of these teenagers from Kansas, because they're telling this story now, I can show this to the world. You know, one of the things that these Kansas teens, these three teenagers did, Liz, Sabrina, and Megan, did was to really crack open the silence of the Holocaust in Poland by bringing this story of a Holocaust hero to Poland. One of the things that they do every time they go to Poland to put on the play is to work with other teenagers in Poland to tell the stories of rescuers from their communities and to find these hidden stories from the war. And this gentleman was one of them. Some teenagers from his community had told his story also, and he was now able to come out of the shadows.
One of the problems, and I have my own personal experience of this because I visited with my mother, my late mother, Lithuania, which has a similar history to Poland, where a deep ambivalence about talking about the past. Because so these Kansas teenagers are going to Polish teenagers, and a simple question that a teenager would have of their parent, "What did you do during the war?" or even more pointedly, to their grandparents, mm-hmm. does not yield a simple answer. Is that what they were finding?
What they found was, and this is a very interesting dynamic in Poland now, is that this generation of young people is the first generation to grow up without communism. So there is and they are discovering that there is this Jewish history in Poland that goes back 1,000 years. 80% of the world's Jews lived in Poland in the 16th century. Poland, the name Poland is a Hebrew word, Polania. It means "here you should dwell." It was the most accepting of the countries for the Jews. And what these young people are now saying is, so what happened to the Jews? They're gone. They were here in huge numbers before that. We have a history and a heritage and of the Jewish contribution to Poland. What happened to the Jews? And so, and these questions are now being answered. There is now a curriculum to teach about the Holocaust in Poland since 2003. There never was one before this, and largely attributable to the efforts of these Kansas teenagers to bring this dialogue.
Just explain briefly what the Warsaw Ghetto was, where she was saving people from.
So the Warsaw Ghetto was the largest ghetto in occupied Europe. It was established in November of 1940 by the Germans, and it required every Jew in Warsaw to, on that date, go into this small area of Warsaw. And to give you a sense of the concentration, of the compaction of the ghetto, at the start of the war, 30% of the population of Warsaw was Jewish. That 30% of the population was squeezed into 2.4% of the area of Warsaw. So typically there would be 8 or 9 people per room in an apartment in the Warsaw ghetto, mostly people that didn't know each other. There was a food rationing system implemented whereby, and this was throughout all of Poland, if you were a German Pole, you had a full ration of 2,700 calories a day. Poles had 700 calories a day. Jews had 184 calories a day. So there was
184
calories a day. So in order to survive,
that's less than a granola bar.
It is starvation rations. So in order to survive, you have to become a criminal and be part of a black market food smuggling, which was what kept people barely alive in the Warsaw Ghetto. So there were, at its highest number, there were 460,000 Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto, and that would have been in 1941.
And what happened to the Warsaw Ghetto?
The ghetto was liquidated in 1942, and between July 22nd, 1942, and September 23rd, about 300,000 of the Jews who still remained alive were transported to Treblinka, which was not a concentration camp, but an extermination camp, where they were within 2 hours usually gassed to death and killed in the.
So was it during the years of the ghetto, perhaps not during the liquidation, is when Irina Sendler was able to take these Jewish children and save them?
And say, yeah, she formed this network before the liquidation started, and during that time, it was actually quite. You know, many parents were very skeptical about giving up their children at that time because, as is natural, their thought was, well, the Germans aren't going to kill us. They're going to keep us alive. We have factories in the ghetto that are producing war material for the Germans. They couldn't comprehend their death or the death of their children. Once the liquidation started in July of 1942, parents were eager to give their children to the network of to Irina's network, and at that and then they were completely overwhelmed. It was like too many people trying to get into the lifeboats.
And how did this change the lives of these Kansas teenagers?
It's the most remarkable. You know, each of these three teens brings a personal burden to this story. Liz was abandoned by her parents when she was a young child and was brought up by her grandparents. Megan's mother develops breast cancer during the course of the project, and Sabrina had a very difficult childhood, and her mother died young. So these three teens, each of which bring this profound, painful issue and burden about their mothers, engages in this project about mothers giving up their children. Liz was a very angry teenager. She was the teenager you thought would never have graduated from high school. I can tell you this is a follow-up, it's not in the book. She has gotten 2 master's degrees, one in education and one in history, and she now teaches Holocaust education to middle school students in Missouri. Megan is the program director for the Life in a Jar Foundation, which continues to do these kind of project-based works with teenagers in every state in the United States and about 30 or 40 countries around the world, where they work with teenagers on projects about unsung heroes like Irina Sendler in history. And Sabrina is an early childhood educator, and she's a teacher. She has 3 children. So, you know, each of these kids has their own arc of what happened with their own character. And in a very real sense, the last 3 children that Irina Sendler rescued were the 3 girls from Kansas.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yep. Yep.
And how has it changed your life?
Well, you know, being the child of Holocaust survivors, the Holocaust has always been a presence in my life ever since I was a young child. And I have always had this sort of sense of mission about what what could I bring to the conversation about the Holocaust in terms of reconciliation, in terms of understanding, in terms of archiving? As a pediatrician, I immunize children against infectious disease. As a writer, this project will, I hope, immunize us against recurrence of this kind of an intolerable history, and also to be able to give to young people this, to share this inspirational story with other young people about what these, how these two 14-year-olds and a 16-year-old changed the world, and really the power of one person to make huge changes in the world, to repair the world. When I give talks to schools and to young people, my main message to them is, you don't have to fix the whole world, but you have to do something. And every small act of repair is worthy and is something that will change the world. That you cannot be a bystander, you have to be an upstander, you have to do something.
Okay, well, Dr. Jack Mayer, I want to thank you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation. Dr. Jack Mayer is the author of Life in a Jar, the Irena Sendler Project. And that does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1 with another Vermont Conversation, and you can hear this and all shows at VermontConversation.com.
Listening to Vermont Conversations with David Goodman, made possible by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and its 750-plus members. Additional support is provided by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. The University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and ski erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, moving surplus foods from farms to those who need it. National Life Group, which lives its values every day to do good, be good, make good. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy innovation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power, as well as over 750 Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility members.
And you're listening to locally owned and operated 96.1 WDEV FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier, the friendly pioneer, and serving the kingdom at FM 101.9 from Island Pond. 2 o'clock, we'll have World and National News Update. 2 hours of music coming right up with The Getaway on the stations of Radio Vermont.
I'm Tim McGuire. After months of grieving over the death of his son,